Welcome to the Camp 4 Performance Podcast, the official podcast of Camp 4 Human Performance, a company started by Dr. Tyler Nelson to give you the most practical, useful, and up-to-date information on rock climbing, training, performance, and rehabilitation. Today, we're going to talk about some recent information that Dr. Tyler Nelson has come to a new perspective on regarding finger training and strength training in specific. New assessment protocols that help us separate two training zones, one that is our maximal loadable finger training zone, and then one, typically a little bit below, that is our maximal muscular force output. Training those two things are both valuable, however, they both have unique opportunities and different things to give us. So we're going to dive into the benefits and some things you have to watch out for both of them, how to assess them, and how to apply them practically to your training program. This podcast, especially sponsored by Tindeck, the assessment tool that is accurate, really amazing, and affordable for climbers and coaches. So, especially for you guys, Tindeck.com, make sure you guys use the code C4HP on checkout to get yourself a discount and to get your assessment numbers dialed in so you can use this information that we're about to drop in this podcast. Thank you, as always, for supporting us. It means the world to us for you guys listening and supporting the Camp 4 Human Performance Company. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode. One of my favorite moments in science and coaching and talking about sports is the moments that we have these aha moments where, and they're for the benefit of performance and the health of the athlete, where we really have to pivot sometimes or even change direction completely on what we've been doing. Because we have new information comes up, we get a new idea, a new perspective. And I think that kind of sums up a little bit of what this podcast is going to be talking about. So today, again, I'm with Dr. Tyler Nelson, Coach Gabe Olson, and myself, Coach Colin McGee. And we're going to be talking about the recent information that Dr. Nelson has been posting about when it comes to understanding the separation of active recruitment versus the rest of the stuff. And it all comes from a new way we've started assessing athletes, and now we have the ability to identify these zones, these regions, this cutoff. So Dr. Nelson, tell us a little bit about where this came from, where the aha moment came, and why it's so important for us moving forward.
I'm mostly just frustrated that I didn't think about it sooner. Testing people like this for 5 years or so now, but there was always a big difference between the loads that people could hang with and the loads that they could, well, the loads that they could pull with their whole upper body and the loads they could hang with were pretty similar. You know, most people were using some time frame to kind of cut off that maximum, but we could estimate it pretty quickly. But it never really occurred to me that there would be that big of a difference between isolating just the finger flexors. And so when it comes to, you know, what I do all day is talk to people with finger injuries. You know, like we mentioned probably in the previous podcast, they say a lot of the same things and people are doing a lot of the same things. And so there has to be some sort of negative implications with just doing those things, right? And we know this in other sports, but now we're kind of getting a broader, you know, data set, let's say, in climbing, you know, so it kind of happened from a couple different things and then just a couple of physiologic, like education things that I've really dug into recently have really kind of elucidated the idea.
Right, that's awesome. And so for anyone that isn't familiar with this, what we're talking about is the ability to isolate the fingers actually kind of curling into our assessment block or the assessment protocol versus an overhead pull where the fingers are locked onto the edge and you are pulling, but primarily with your upper larger muscles. And thus the fingers are more resisting movement than they are trying to create movement. And this goes into our definitions of the isometrics, overcoming versus yielding, and that how the overcoming isometric is a little bit more concentric-like. The muscle is trying to shorten, and then the yielding isometric, or the overhead pulling version is a yield or eccentric leg. So the muscle's kind of actually stretching. And those two things are important, even though, again, it kind of seems like nuance. So why is that important to understand down to that detail when it comes to climbing training and what we're using this information for?
I think the easiest way that I like to describe to my clients or, you know, people that are trying to learn these ideas is thinking about the one rep max. And so we define a one rep max by the concentric portion of the movement, where if you're doing a pull up one rep max, you pull upwards and your chin goes over the bar. That's the concentric portion of that movement. That's how we define the load that we can use, but that has very little passive tension because it's mostly just muscular recruitment. And so if we do the opposite movement and we do a maximum where we start with our chin over the bar and we lower to straight arm, straight elbow, we can do 50% greater load. So the load is massively different. And for years, people have considered the difference as primarily more recruitment with the eccentric muscle contractions. But now we have the data to support that that's not why we get that extra load on, you know, the body in that particular movement. That comes from adding passive tension. The other thing that I think is the most important is as soon as that load is removed, that adaptation goes away. So doing it is not necessarily giving us a benefit if the thing that we're doing it for doesn't have the same load. Right. Gotcha. It's gonna be an easy way to think about it. And the fingers are confusing because we're not shortening the fingers every, you know, time we hang on a fingerboard, and we're not lengthening the fingers. We're just kind of holding in a static position. But when I'm curling, when I'm attempting to pull, that type of muscle contraction is called an overcoming isometric, which has been shown to be more like a concentric, which is like the pulling up. And then when I'm hanging on something and I'm resisting some sort of external load, that is more like an eccentric. So the kind of like tying a bunch of different ideas together and the physiology of how we adapt to climbing. But really, when you look at like the three different types, well, we're breaking down isometrics to be both. But when we look at a concentric and an eccentric, the recruitment levels are the same in someone that's trained. And so for a beginner, and that's one of the big questions that I get, you know, that again, I don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not saying that fingerboarding in general is a terrible idea. It's not helpful or going to make someone strong. But for someone that has high levels of recruitment already, what I'm saying is they're not getting any sort of additional benefit by adding load. Sure. Because all of those types of muscle contractions have the same level of recruitment potentially. The difference is that active tension.
One of the things I am most interested in is, and maybe to clarify for the listeners as well, is exactly where is this passive tension coming from? Is it ligament? Is it bone? Is it little tiny things within even the muscle fibers that is contributing to this ability to load super maximally beyond the muscle's pure force max?
Yeah, it's a little molecule called chitin, which attaches to like the ends of the muscle fibers. So if the muscle fibers are long strands, chitin attaches to the backsides of each of them. And there's three isoforms of this molecule. And when we load with an eccentric heavily, we load the stiff segment of those three, which immediately adds lateral force transmission and a lot of, we force those tissues to act in an elastic way. And so we just have so much more potential. Essentially just makes our muscle fibers really efficient in those types of muscle contractions. And by efficient, I mean like really strong. And so we use way less total like motor units or percentages of motor units when we do eccentric muscle contractions. So another like easy example is like if I was going to use the pull-up example, and let's say we're doing our pull-up one rep max. When I do my one rep max for the pull-up, when I do the eccentric portion with that load, I'm only using maybe 50% of the muscle fibers because of that additional efficiency with passive tension. And so when we translate that and so the first example that we gave, when we go heavy eccentrics, when I say 50% more load, that's if we're doing super maximal eccentric loads, which is like not a good idea to do for pull-ups for a climber. Maybe for someone that's doing like pull-up competitions, that makes sense. But for a climber, that doesn't make any sense. But using the fingers is kind of how what a max weighted hang is. We add all this extra load on top of the body. And what I would argue is that when climbers that are experienced and they have lots of strength and recruitment already, when they keep doing that, they're actually inhibiting their ability to gain more active tension because of that efficiency. So long-term, max weight hangs make very little sense in terms of getting someone an additional strength and or recruitment benefit.
Gotcha. No, that's very cool, Z. So with the assessment, we are, again, kind of curling our fingers into the block and working as hard as we can. That's this new, not so new number, but that's the number we're now kind of hyper-focused on relative to the one that is over our head. We're pulling down with everything, and now it's a separate number. So is it fair to say that we can take that number that we're now focusing on, that finger curl into the block, and kind of use that to create training loads?
Yeah, I think those numbers are more representative, and they're not as influenced by someone's ability to be really strong in their upper extremity. And I think we'll probably at some point talk about some of the examples for like myself or a female client of mine, and then Allison, because even Allison, who has superpower in her strength is significantly different when we isolate her finger flexors, and everyone's is. But I see that, you know, something like a max weighted hang test, when we use this as an assessment, which a lot of people do around just, you know, on their own, whatnot, that's not a very good predictor of your level of like finger flexor recruitment and activation, because it's inhibited, or it's not inhibited, but it's influenced by that upper body pull strength. So I think if we can isolate the finger flexors, we can still use a fingerboard. And the video on my Instagram account shows the difference in load was like 65 pounds difference would have been the predicted load if I had just isolated my finger flexors. And then people, you know, just as a knee-jerk reaction, they'll say, well, I can do more than that. I should do more. But more is not better in that case. More is certainly not going to be as transferable to the sport, because I think that's something that everyone forgets is the only damn reason we care anyways is because we're trying to make what we do off the wall transfer to the wall, you know, and that's kind of the whole basis behind this topic and kind of changing, I think, what we should do in regards to that, is because we're not likely to get a transfer from those other loads. So I think it makes perfect sense, and it's really easy to test.
Right. Yeah. I think it was like kind of like a funny thought last night. Was strength training research shoots at 70 to 80% of maximums for strength training minimum stimulus. And if you look at that absolute max load that you could hang with, and then the finger flexor isolated test, and then we try and take, you know, 70 or 80% of that, it's so much less. And that's what probably is going to be the knee jerk reaction, like you said. It feels like, but it's so low. It's what, 40% of my maximal load? How is that going to get me stronger? And what we're saying is that we just have two separate identifiable zones. We're here, if we're here to truly work on the muscle and its recruitment potential, that we want to work in the muscle zone rather than an absolute limit of like the system of the fingers zone.
Yeah, I think that's makes total sense.
So maybe rewind that a few times, listen to that, and eventually hopefully it'll stick. But if not, we've got plenty more.
Maybe one thing we can talk, I'm not sure if it's on the list, but like about different methods for testing that. There's a whole bunch of options that I've done, and I'm really familiar with using that methodology and testing on myself and my numbers. And so like, I know how to make it pretty isolated where it's really hard. Well, not really hard, but people need to learn kind of the nuance of if you're putting your elbow flat on something and you're curling with your fingers, you initially lift your elbow off because you're curling with your fingers. Then you got to pull it back down. Yeah. And so that method is like the ones that's been researched, they strap your elbow down. But if you can just like keep the elbow planted down, you know, it's pretty accurate. The other method that I like is horizontal, where your elbow is blocked by like a J hook and you're pulling horizontally. I think that method works, but it also has the same problem where you're pulling your elbow away from the restriction. But the vertical position is the easiest. And I have clients hook a sling around their Tyndek and stand on a 2x4 and pull vertically. That works really well. Sometimes you can make a platform to stand on. And as long as the knees are locked out and the elbows are locked out and you're, you know, being intentional with the movement and try and pull your body into the ground, like my numbers on all three of those tests are very similar. And so I think there's ways that we can use that and still like make it really simple for people, but also target the finger flexors. But it does not have to be. And that's another thing that people always kind of get really like talkative about, or not argumentative, but like people are concerned about, is like, that doesn't look like the rock climbing, right? Where fingerboarding looks more like rock climbing. And I totally get that. But like, in terms of if we're going to get a transfer to the sport, I don't really want to get better at fingerboarding. I don't want to get better at hanging a load heavy, like we talked about last time with strength. What I want to do is I want to increase recruitment, and then I want to transfer that to rock climbing. You know, that's really the MO for why we do it in the first place.
Yeah. Like, I think the one thing I noticed initially is the first time I did it, I was on the tip of my elbow, and then I could kind of come up into my shoulder, and I was using more upper body and like muscles than I thought I was. And so then I really had to drop down until I got my entire shoulder pinned. Then it was like, oh, okay. Like it was a drastic difference.
Gotcha.
And so I think there's like those little trial errors. And then the standing variation, I think you still tend to have that when you really try hard to like kind of shrug it back. And so once you learn to like, I kind of like started just to put my hand on just as a cueing to just not let it shrug then just do that. And so that was like simple, but I think those are so far what I've run into. It's like,
I think the cue that I like to think is pulling down, pull your body down. Cause if you want to pull up, then you're going to want to lift things up like your shoulders. But if you pull down, and people get kind of maybe like worked up about, well, you're still getting tension everywhere. You physically cannot just isolate the finger flexors. That's not physiologically possible. So you're always going to get tension with any type of testing, even in the most controlled circumstances. And so I would say more important than anything is that you do the same damn test the next time you do it.
Yeah.
You know, and give people some cues and have them try a few things and see what the numbers look like. If the numbers look way too similar to their polling numbers, then they're probably including more, you know, upper body. And I think we did that the last time we tested Allison with that protocol. I think her strength weight, I think I forget the exact numbers, but the strength weight ratio with the first portions when we were doing it were like 2.3 or something, which then we corrected the position and there was like a, you know, 20-30% difference in force. So there's definitely the ability to do that. And climbers will always unintentionally cheat the test because they just try hard and they're good at, you know, trying hard. And so I think just a simple cue fixes that problem, but getting people familiar with the testing, I think, is all it takes, but it doesn't take very long.
I was going to say, even when we did use just the chain and big muscles, like you could people start to lean back and you try to start to use a lot of things. And so there's always the game of like, okay, am I getting the number to benefit me or am I just trying to cheat the test to get the number for the ego, you know? And so like, there is that side. Allison was always kind of interesting to watch because it seems like her 140, like 20 area is just like crazy strong, like the straighter their arm. And because that, I think
did full, you say that full extension,
yeah, full, like extension, full extension,
superpower.
And, yeah. And that's, that one's really interesting because what is that, just shoulder? Like
back
what
and, is back that? And lat.
Like back? Mostly yeah. Just back all lat. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Just, like the essentially the sling that's on the front and the back just like is just like great leverage, great leverage, great recruitment, lots of type two motor units, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Hers is always fun to watch because it looks so much different than everyone else's of just the position. Like she's really underneath the edge, you know, you're like, whoa. Cool. I guess like it's interesting that we're kind of coming back because I know I've showed Colin it and I think I might even shot a video when I was at your studio of it, but like one of the things I used to do for, or I do with my athletes and I do myself for, I originally did it kind of like getting pumped and average for you is like ground walking on holds where I kept my feet on the ground, but then like would climb boulder problems and feel positions because I wanted to feel like if I could load the move. And so I just had really heavy hands, but just my feet kind of on the ground walking. And then if I was ever like cross a position that I was like, oh, I stood up in my legs and I actually don't think I have the weight in the hand, then I would actually try to get on the wall and see if I could hang that position. but it kind of just taught me to figure out how to, like, what amount of pressure and weight you're actually putting into the hold and where your feet are actually compensating for that as well. And so I think, like, the, you can gain a lot of skill of just the ground walking on holds and of different sizes and pinches and hand grips, which would be kind of that active, constant, like, how much tension is actually going into this hold when I have all my limbs on the wall. And I think that's where people hangboarding can get kind of weird, because you feel so much force, but then, like, you're probably never feeling that type of stuff when you're actually on the wall, which we talked about, because you do have your feet on and you do have things. So I think ground walking actually is probably pretty good.
Dude, I'm glad you mentioned that. I was talking to a client yesterday who had been doing that.
Yeah.
Shout out to Peter from Lander. And he does that, like, ground walking for the same reason, to get a pump. And I was going to shoot a video. I was like, dude, that is active tension.
Yeah.
Because you can pull into every hold. Yeah. You can, like, grab and pull into a hold. And so I think people have known that for quite some time, like you have, but it's really understanding, like, you know, why is that helpful and how can we differentiate that from just, like, making our fingers stronger and, like, what are some of the implications? But that, as well as putting your feet on the wall, like we talked about last time and maybe in the article, is, like, the reason that we get stronger fingers by doing that is because you'll grab onto a hold and then you'll pull it into a position. So you are training, like, active recruitment, so, which is pretty cool. It's very intuitive.
And the funny part is, like, I'll have people laugh at me all the time, because I'll say, like, I have, like, ground walking projects and like moves that are really hard. And they're like, well, what do you mean? Like, your feet are on the ground. But I'm like, well, but my hands are fatiguing because I'm trying hard moves and I'm taking time to do them, that they're building up. And, like, my fingers are getting tired. So, yeah, like, they're still project. Like, you can still do hard movements and get that idea and, like, the sensation going and the skill to hold those holds better and harder. And so I think, like, as much as it probably is active strength training, but it also has a huge skill side of, like, learning how to efficiently hold different positions and stuff without being so taxing or worrying about the dry firing, you know, or anything like that. And just adding those, you know, popping off of something, you can really spend the time to adjust. And if you found the open hand position was hard or whatever, you can take a little bit of weight off with your feet on the floor and back up a bit, and then still figure it out and, like, fine tune. It's like adjustable wall. It's the same thing. You know, it's like, you're just moving the angle for you to get the sensation and the, you know, so it's kind of a fun way to do it.
And the long story short there is, we're trying to just isolate the fingers versus getting anything else involved. And so if the fingers are moving net kind of towards your palm, you're doing it right. And if the fingers are ever resisting movement and something's trying to push them open, like overhead pulling, or if you're actually trying to deadlift something off the ground, that's where we're going to start leaking into that passive tension. And we're just assessing a different number. So from these numbers that you get, if we do this test accurately and well, what does it look like to train them both on the hangboard, which covered a little bit? We have, like, new training loads. And we also covered a little bit with the floor walking. So what can we do with these numbers once we get them?
I would say, like, we would use the numbers to either, if you have the ability to measure your efforts with some sort of measuring device like the Tyndek, and you can pull and measure every rep, that's the easiest way to do it and be motivated and get feedback. And it's exciting and interesting. Without that tool, then we can just, you know, pull against 100% resistance, which still works, but it's not as interesting or fun or motivating. One of the things that I think is really important with the article is, no other sport or coach would suggest that a way to increase recruitment is increase the repetition length. Or I'm sorry, yeah, increase the repetition length, not the repetition number, the repetition length. And so that's kind of what the 10-second hang or whatever 7-second hang does, is it does not take 7 seconds to hit peak recruitment levels. And we can see that really easily with the test. And so if our set is one rep, but that rep is long before we take a long rest, that's not a very good way to learn the recruitment, the highest levels of recruitment with a given activity. And most people that are doing 85%+, they're doing like 1 to 3 repetitions. And so we could take like a 10-second effort and we could break it down into 3 individual reps at max intensity, where essentially we can say, and what we say in the other strength conditioning world, is you're getting way more first reps with that methodology. And so the example would be like five sets of a 10 second hang. You only get five first reps, but that 10 second hang, the load is not your peak recruitment because you're expecting it to last 10 seconds. You're hitting a high level of recruitment, but it's probably not your peak recruitment, especially because it's an eccentric, which is more efficient. But if I do five sets of three reps, now I'm hitting 15 first reps approximately. And if I can quantify those and see that those numbers are high, there's absolutely no way that that's a better methodology for increasing recruitment in the fingers. Just, it just makes way more sense. And especially if it's a sport that doesn't have an external load, we rely on that much recruitment. Like all we have on the wall is how much active recruitment we have, unless our feet are cutting and we're jumping and, you know, plyometrics and rate of force is a little bit different. But when it comes to the strength and the force you use, like that's all we got.
Just before we started filming, I was doing the assessment and I think I was just doing try it until I got towards my max and then would hold it until I had like roughly a 10% loss. And then I would just let go, rest, and then give myself 5 seconds or so, pull again. And then I could only get like 3 to 4 reps. And then I was just like way below that 10% or 20% cutoff. And I'd just be done, have to take a couple minutes off. So it was kind of easy to do it that, or like kind of fun and do it. I was just trying to think if you could, you know how you can do pull against a hang board, like standing on a scale to get like the weight off and use that as a thing. I'm trying to think if you could do that in the vertical situation, but it'd be instead of adding weight. So yeah, instead of taking off, so you could use the scale in the vertical position that way for people who don't want to go buy a Tyndek. They could do it.
Yeah, it's really the intention. Like if people are really looking to get those small improvements in recruitment, then like just make sure that the intention is there and you're not trying to cheat it. And that's all you need to do. And your fingers will respond slowly and accordingly. Okay. And the thing that was good about having the measurement device, you know, and I think the Tyndek has done such a good job with the new application where you can actually do multiple reps in a row and you can see what the forces look like. Essentially, like a strength training block or, you know, period of time in your training needs to end at some time. It like at some point you're going to plateau. And as soon as you plateau, that's when you want to probably move on. And then you want to do another type of intervention in which you're increasing the rate of force, right? And then maybe bring back a couple of those recruitment efforts in like your performance phase to keep that, you know, talk and that, that coordination in your brain to your muscle fibers. But what we're talking about really is like a dedicated block for maybe 2 to 3 weeks where you're all about getting your recruitment numbers up. But the other thing that's really good about having the measurement device is you can see when you plateau. And so as soon as you plateau is when you should probably switch what you're doing, not just keep throwing yourself on the fingerboard, which is what happens. People don't really know when they've plateaued, but what we've talked about already, if we talk about recruitment, they probably plateaued way before, but they just like keep doing it. And the consequences of that are pretty big where, and I don't know if you have another question, Colin, but I think the energetics would be really interesting on like passive tension, because maybe the easy way of saying it is, you know, you'll get metabolic stress with eccentrics, but they're not really negatively influenced by it. So the example that I give people is if you go and you have a climbing session, your climbing session has a net accumulation of metabolic materials in your capillary beds. Active tension is negatively influenced by that kind of fatigue. Passive tension is not really influenced by that negative fatigue. That fatigue usually happens and the breakdown happens 24 to 48 hours after the event. And so a lot of times climbers can have a climbing session, even if it's not very hard, and then they go do a heavy fingerboarding protocol, they can still do the heavy fingerboarding protocol. But that's like, that's not like a useful protocol at all, because you're tired already. You're relying on the passive tension, and that especially the really heavy loads, they have more fatigue induced with them, right? And so another thing that is very common in climbing is relying on types of muscle contractions that aren't influenced by acute amounts of fatigue, which long-term absolutely is risky.
If you were going to do just the recruitment pulls and then you plateau and then you start to improve your RFD and you get that, and then that starts to now finally get to a base and you're in your performance, do you just go right back to recruitment pulls and just, you could alternate between those two, essentially getting more, getting faster, getting more, getting faster, and just flip-flop between those two and like instead of like would you ever need to do like max hangs in or like hangboarding then?
Could you just I think hangboarding is still a good option for like a warm-up because it will get you a decent amount of recruitment, you know, for individual fairly quickly. And it's a load to the connective tissues that's a different kind of load than climbing in terms of like the elasticity versus the strain that's induced with climbing. So I think that's a good location for it. But I would say the other option would be if you're a sport climber and you need capacity, you can do repeaters in the same fashion.
Sure.
Where that's a whole nother like topic of that I posted about recently, where if we're doing repeaters on a fingerboard, people usually pick a lower intensity, maybe 75%. But if that's done on a fingerboard and those are eccentrics, what we're doing is we're getting selective hypertrophy in the small muscle fibers, right? Because we're not really engaging the type 2X motor units because the intensity is, we're just not going to do it. And so in that context, that might be a pretty good intervention for sport climbers looking to build capacity if they have a pretty good amount of power already, if they're coming from a bouldering background and they just need to get a bunch of work done and a bunch of metabolic stress, repeaters on a fingerboard probably makes really good sense. But for an athlete that is like is an endurance junkie, let's say, and they naturally just have a lot of distance they can travel, that's a really bad protocol for them because they're just going to keep doing the same shit that they're good at and they're going to get really tired. They would be much better off pulling on their fingers and doing repeaters. So like we can go like you could take this a whole bunch of different ways, which is really pretty cool for an individual and their own needs.
So to reiterate how to take the recruitment numbers and make them use, as long as your fingers are working and the intention, like Tyler said, is there. Sometimes I tell my clients to imagine little weight scales underneath their fingertips and you're trying to like weigh down those scales. As long as that stuff's there, it doesn't matter if you're standing over something, if it's above your head, you can even hang with two hands as long as you're working within those recruitment numbers and not your max numbers, you're going to be getting recruitment benefit out of that. And again, as long as it's not too long where we start dipping into the other side. What I want to circle back to, we've talked a lot about is using the climbing walls in new ways. Like what you said in your article was like, turn the lights off. Don't always have to climb the moon board way, or the tension board way. You can just use it and bring these principles to the board to get benefit. So can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if we talked about it last time, and these are all, we'll all run together, but that's like the tension board was not designed to be the light board.
Yeah.
So Will would say, and he told me that like they were designed to like get a symmetric side to side, you know, way in which you can get in really hard positions and create force and create tension, which is exactly kind of, that would be probably more a whole body and finger tension. But that's a great use of that tool and what its original design was for. But really that methodology is real giving people the other portion of how we get stronger, where the one that we've been talking about is getting high levels of recruitment in the big muscle fibers. The other way that we get stronger, increased strength, is with coordination. And so there's multiple adaptations that go on, like when we do some sort of strength protocol. The easy example is doing a deadlift. You deadlift a certain amount of weight, and then over a couple of weeks, if you're new to the deadlift, you deadlift 50% more. You probably didn't get stronger. You probably got really efficient and coordinated at that movement, but that doesn't guarantee that you are producing more force. That definitely guarantees that you've gotten better at the skill. So that's great, but most climbers don't want to get good at the skill of deadlifting. They want to get better at producing force so they can apply it to rock climbing. So when it comes to the fingerboard, there's a big adaptation that comes with the fingerboard too. Doing max weighted hangs absolutely has a coordination adaption. And so a lot of people that get really strong really quickly with that intervention, it's mostly coordination. And because of the types of muscle contractions, their recruitment will plateau and then they won't get any more beyond that. So conversely, if we use the climbing wall and we just like practice grabbing onto small holds, like, and that's something that was really amazing for me. It's probably the most helpful thing that I've ever done for my own training was having a spray wall and just spend, you know, a couple months or a whole summer just climbing on small holds. But it makes me use the wall differently because if I use the small holds and the small feet, Now it has a power component. And if the holds are far away and they're technically difficult, now I'm not spending that much time on those holds. And so the idea and the logic behind it is really giving the athlete plenty of time to practice grabbing onto hard holds, but you accessing those either by what Gabe was talking about with your feet on the ground or with your feet on the wall and making sure you're getting that practice. And if the holds are small enough, that will also produce what we would consider strength gain for climbing through coordination.
Well, and I think as much as we're just talking about the coordination of that on the wall, that's exactly why like small edge hanging is so hard. Is like everyone always thinks it's that they're not strong enough, but there's a tremendous amount of coordination to hang the small edges. And I think that's more likely the reason people who can hang small edges, they're not necessarily stronger. They're really coordinated at doing that. Like I think some of the top athletes, like they hang the small edges because they're competition athletes who caught incredible contact strength, incredible coordination. And that's the reason they can kind of just do that a lot easier. So I agree totally. I spend a lot of time on the tension board. And I think it's funny because some people will actually kind of look at it and be like, why aren't you up on the moon board ever? And it's not like that, and kind of like see it different because it looks boring. Because I'm not jumping around all the time, that I am trying to find the difference. And if you actually use that mirroring feature, like I think everyone always just thinks, oh, I'm going to have to climb the same problem twice. And they kind of get bored with that. But I think they're missing that if you watch yourself climb that problem twice, your body's an artist at compensating. And so it's really cool to see how many people change the beta slightly going on the same climb, the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. And so that you're like, oh, well, that's a coordination thing. Like that's right. Like, so instead of you worrying about the send, just go back to those moves and go left, right, and figure out like, oh, why is turning one way way easier than turning this way? Why can I grab that small crimp with my right hand, but I not my left? It's probably a stimulus and a coordination thing. And I think once you really dive into that, it was really fun to go from like the tension board with wood holds and slippery and all of those hard moves up to the moon board and then suddenly having texture and something, and you can just rip through and you are way like, I mean, that transfer was huge. And so right. I had my biggest gain on the moon board by doing the tension board.
Oh yeah. That's cool. Which was, yeah,
so kind of funny. Cool. Little plug tension.
Yeah. No. There you go. Moon boarders.
Oh, you're welcome, Will. Now Will's he hooks me up for sure.
Well, that's right. And he's a crusher. So just, you know, look at Will's ability and strength. You know,
I'm pretty sure he's part bird. he has a leg for an arm. There was an Instagram post recently where I was like, dude, your forearm looks like a calf. Like that is a big calf, long arm.
Oh my God. He's a bird.
That's awesome. And I think the people definitely have spoken on this one. We're going to need way more time for a podcast because I have a few more things I want to get over, but a little less than 10 minutes. How long has it been? About 50 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
Oh wow.
Yeah. I've been talking a lot.
No, it's okay. So we got 8 minutes left here, and I want to at least wrap up this one with not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And so I want to talk about circling back to those max hangs, the passive tension land. Is there benefit there? What can we get out of it? I know we kind of want to talk about a little bit hypertrophy, connective tissue health. Is there stuff for us to gain benefit from there? And when would we do it?
You're talking about like doing max things or just hangboarding period?
Or just anything that gets us past that like recruitment threshold. So we're starting to identify the difference with like the testing. Is there any benefit to training in that above the recruitment threshold stuff? So longer duration hangs, max hangs.
Yeah. Right? I was going to say like, where does density hangs fall in? You know, like, you know,
I think those are great for rehab because those are longer and they're slower essentially. And so they will like have more elasticity to the tendon because they're slow, but they're going to reduce, you know, performance and power output a little bit in that particular phase. So I would say, and I was answering someone on Instagram today that I think hanging on your fingers is still probably the better intervention for rehabilitation because we want to get a lot of load to the connective tissues. But I always think about it from the risk standpoint where if the load is so great and the load is so high and my muscles can't tolerate the load, what's to say that my pulleys and my, you know, other connective tissues, my fingers should be able to tolerate that kind of load. You know, if all we can use on the wall is what we can actively get, why do we need all that extra stuff? You know, I would say there's definitely risks with doing that, because those types of muscle contractions are also very fatiguing. And so when we do a lot of them when we're climbing, the reality is we hang on our fingers a lot when we're climbing. So we're already doing a lot of those types of adaptive loads that are probably greater than our recruitment threshold to some degree, that I don't think that there's a whole great argument to say that doing more of them at an even higher intensity really makes a whole lot of sense personally.
On that same note, I guess, what about doing like a density duration recruitment pull? So like when we isolate our elbow still, like if I was going to pull for 30 seconds, even though I know my number is going to be dropping far down, but like what would that be like?
That would just be a more fatiguing muscle contraction that would maybe be okay for hypertrophy. But the hypertrophy literature would say that things beyond 15 repetitions, which would be around 30 seconds, is kind of the cap for the tension that's necessary and or useful for gaining some sort of hypertrophy. So, but I think hypertrophy also would be an okay thing to get, and climbers all have it because we do a lot of these muscle contractions already. And so eccentric loads, passive tension will increase muscle hypertrophy. And that's why naturally climbers just have big arms, just big forearms, just because they get hypertrophy from the passive tension.
But that's
your question.
Well, if a density hand is a long duration eccentric, what is a long duration concentric doing?
So it would probably have similar things. It just would be more fatiguing from a muscular standpoint.
Even if we're isolating the elbow.
Or actually, it would be influenced more by fatigue, but it wouldn't produce as much fatigue because there's not as much of a stretch to the muscle. Where really the eccentric contractions, the stretching of the muscles and the opening of these calcium ion channels is really what gives this muscle breakdown and delayed onset muscle soreness. Concentric movements don't really do that. So another one of the best arguments to be made for why those make sense for training is they are less like risky from an energetic standpoint. They're not going to make you as tired, but they're probably going to give you a better benefit when it comes to actually something that's applied to the climbing wall, which is another amazing reason why you would do an overcoming isometric in that way, is you don't have very much stretch to the muscle fibers in that context. Hanging at max intensity, massive amounts of like stretch to the muscle fibers. And the sure. video that I did of doing a mono hang on my two middle monos, I felt it for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I've never done this before, but I'll bet I can. And so I did it and I was like, oh my God, like, how can I do that? Right? Like, how can we do that? There's no way I can produce 50% of my body weight on one finger.
Right. Yeah. One of the dumbest things I did in my climbing career is early on, I used to travel out to Lander all the time and I loved climbing pockets. And the only hard holds we had in our gym was pockets. So I got really good at them. And I would do like 20 plus mono pull-ups in a row all the time. And now I'm like terrified of hanging body weight on monos. Like I just quit doing it for such a long time that when I went back, I like tried to do it and I was like, ooh, I stretched, but I just ended up doing too many of them that I just like stretched everything out. And I got hurt like pretty bad one time because I just kept doing the volume of
the mono.
I'm never trying to load more. Like I never added weight to my mono hands. I just did more pull-ups on them and it was not good after a while. But
I mean, monos is a bonkers amount of weight of body weight, even. That's a lot of weight for your fingers.
Yeah. But I mean, have you ever been to like the gyms in Lander? It's so wild. Like it's like, I'm trying to think, it's like 308, I don't know, bouldering or something, but like, it's cool because because their local area is so pocket heavy, their gym's really pocket heavy.
Yeah.
And so everyone there just looks comfortable on them, and everyone who climbs in Lander, because they just build up it over time. And that's just kind of what everyone adapts to. So, I mean, I'm sure there is that side of it, but it's scary to like see the really good mono climbers there just plug a half pad and pull
that's it. I think that's an okay use of, that's a totally practical use. If you got to use it, you got to use it.
You have to, yeah.
You know,
you can't escape pockets in Lander. Like, so
that's right.
Like, yeah.
Oh, pockets scare me. Not there yet. So, all right. So that was a lot of good. We're definitely might have to do like a part two kind of stuff into this. I think to sum up
it is very useful. And now I think more achievable with tools like the Tindec for all climbers and coaches to help better identify these two different zones, your absolute max threshold that involves this passive tension we talked about, but also your isolated finger recruitment threshold. Because now you have a new training zone that's going to be really effective at getting you stronger, increasing your recruitment. It's low cost to fatigue. You can build more area under the curve, and it's going to just improve the quality of your strength training sessions, which we're going to have to transition into more power, more speed, more velocity, but we're going to cover that in another podcast. So if you have access to a test or a coach, get your fingers tested, understand these new training zones, see what your gap is, and it's going to make a big difference for your training journey.
For people that are watching that have gyms that are psyched to host courses, like, you know, running these things in 60 minutes is like bananas, how it's not really that practical, where if people have gyms that they work at or are gym owners and they want to host, you know, courses, we definitely have that as probably the more practical option, because we'll try and cover lots of things here, but it's never as well delivered as it would be in one like couple day thing. So there's that.
Absolutely. Exactly. As well. Yeah. Yep. No, we'll get that too. That 2023 calendar we can work on. So anyone that has space, hosting ability, give us a shout out. Camp4HumanPerformance.com and at C4HP. At Technically Strong and Atlas McGee are places to message us if you have opportunity for us to come by and spend more than an hour chatting about this stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, all righty. Any final thoughts, my friends?
I think we covered it.
No, I wanted to think of a dad joke, but the one I know is kind of people know. So I'll find another one
for next time. You got to keep the listeners wanting next time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Spence. All righty. Thank you again, everyone, for tuning into this episode. I hope it brought you as much value as it did me, a coach, even a coach on the Camp 4 team. Again, make sure you take advantage of that coupon code C4HP at the checkout cart of tindec.com. That is T-I-N-D-E-Q. For your opportunity to get some money off some really great assessment tools that come at an amazing price. It's only $150 for the Progressor 150 and only $220 for the new Progressor 300, which has a bigger capacity. It has 300 kilograms or over 600 pounds. So you can start to really yank and pull on this thing and it's not going to break at all. And their app is updated. It's very user-friendly and intuitive. Take advantage of that. Do your testing. Test your fingers in isolation. Test your overhead pull. Identify those two training zones and really, really maximize the benefit of your training cycles now and watch it come alive on the wall. Again, thank you so much for your support. Like this, share this, leave us reviews and comments. Let us know what you guys want to hear next. See you next time.